All right, good morning and welcome to another edition of Weekend Magazine. We have a very special guest for you today and a very special attraction. His name is Mike Fisher. He is the member of the Board of Trustees of the Rhinebeck Aerodrome and also the Secretary of the Board. Mike, do I have the name right? Is it Rhinebeck Aerodrome, or is there another name that's...
We are the Old Rhinebeck Aerodrome.
Old Rhinebeck Aerodrome. And that's up, where is that located?
Interestingly, we're located in Red Hook by about 10 feet. The aerodrome itself is actually technically in Red Hook, but Cole Palin, our founder, took the name from a New York State historical placard that was down closer, a little bit closer to Rhinebeck, about an old Rhinebeck cemetery.
Oh.
And he just felt that it rolled off the tongue a little bit better than old Red Hook Aerodrome.
Isn't that something? He was an amazing person. Why don't we start with maybe say a little bit about Cole Palin and how everything got started, and then maybe go into how you got involved and what your experiences have been, and then we'll get into the actual place and the collections and all the other stuff.
Cole Palin was a unique individual. He, at the age of 3 years old, got moved under the traffic pattern of a great old Hudson Valley airport at Red Oaks Mill, and grew up there watching the airplanes fly overhead. His family had a chicken farm, and he hoped someday to be able to go fly those airplanes. He had hero worship for the pilots, but he was shy.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, a piece of the airplane, an airplane fell off and landed on the farm. It was a starting crank. He used to crank the engine to start it. And he grabbed that and held onto it for a couple of days, and then went over to the airport with a starting crank and got an airplane ride for returning
isn't that nice?
Yeah, and that sealed the deal. And he decided that someday he would own those airplanes. Did not work out right away. He was in the military in World War II, but he was an infantryman in the Battle of the Bulge.
Mm-hmm.
But when he returned, he used the GI Bill in order to learn to fly and to go to aviation mechanics school at Roosevelt Field down on Long Island. And at that point, Roosevelt Field was about to become a Macy's. It was going to be a shopping center.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a small museum of aircraft. And Cole bid on the airplanes, assuming he wouldn't get them. The other significant bidder was the Smithsonian. Interestingly, with his accumulated war pay, Cole outbid the Smithsonian for six of the aircraft.
Wow.
Yeah, and he brought them home to his mother's chicken coop and started rebuilding them, and then initially flew them at Stormville, New York, an airport that's still in existence,
mm-hmm.
and then started looking for a place of his own. Found an abandoned farm in northern Dutchess County. It was a piece of property that was up for tax sale. There was a mystery about it. The owner had been killed and arson had been attempted on his house. And in fact, that's a subject of a play that's being produced.
Really?
But that's sort of a sidetrack. But anyway, he took down stone walls separating three farm fields and built a rudimentary runway and started to fly his airplanes there. And people showed up to watch. That was the fascinating thing. People began to show up to watch. And ultimately, that was going to become the little nugget that started the aerodrome. He originally put out a top hat for donations.
Mm-hmm.
He began to get some publicity. He wound up in the Daily News. He wound up in the aviation press. More and more people started to come. And his thought was, well, if I'm going to charge people or ask for donations at that point, I'd ought to give them something. And so he put together a series of what he called flight demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
That evolved into the air show that we do today. And so really over the course of the 60 years, and we are celebrating our Diamond Jubilee, this is our 60th year,
wow.
We have been doing essentially the same air show since about 1965, 66. And the airplanes have rotated in and out. Cole Palin left us in 1993. He passed away. And at that time, left the collection to the Rhinebeck Aerodrome Museum, which was actually existed only as a file folder in a cardboard box. It was something he had set up. Understanding that someday it would have to pass on. And at that point, it was no longer a private business. It became a 501c3 nonprofit, and that's how we exist today. The umbrella organization is the Rhinebeck Aerodrome Museum. The facility is the Rhinebeck Aerodrome. And the collection at this point, about 70 airplanes, depending on what you consider to be an airplane. We fly the air shows every Saturday and every Sunday during the season. And this year, our season runs from June 9th and 10th through October 21st and 22nd.
So first of all, we get to see how one person can make a difference. There's an example right there that no good deed, you know, doesn't get rewarded in some way. Him bringing back that part, open the door there, you know, and then all the
there
joy you're giving.
There are days when dealing with those 70 airplanes, there are days when we think no good deed goes unpunished.
That's right. I'll tell you, though, if that farm was a weird farm, the way it what was going on there, you should take a metal detector. There might be something buried. There might be gold or something. And
we've been over that runway because the runway was very rudimentary, and you had asked how I got involved.
Yeah.
And one of the ways I got involved as youngsters, I helped pick rocks out of the runway. My involvement came about, I was a Cub Scout, and my den mother packed up the station wagon, and we all rolled out to see this crazy person who was doing these old airplanes somewhere nearby. And she drove onto the runway. The station wagon sank up to the frame in the mud. We had to be towed out. But the bottom line was that I was hooked, and that was in the early 60s, and I have essentially been there involved in one way or another ever since. I involved my family. I rebuilt four antique airplanes myself.
Wow.
And learned to fly there soloed when I was 16, and have been involved as an air show announcer, and have did that for 25 years, just about every other Saturday and Sunday all summer. And
wow.
Now I do that occasionally.
So you don't need an engineering degree. You just need to hang around places like that, and you learn as you grow up. And it also means start young, right? It's a great thing for parents to get kids involved in things at a young age that they're interested in and see
that
where it develops.
True. And I think that's a little known part of our activity. One of the things that's very important to understand about the aerodrome is that people think of us as a tourist attraction, and there's no doubt that's what we are. But technically, we are a museum and an educational institution chartered by the Board of Regents of the state of New York, mm-hmm. and our mission is aviation education.
Mm-hmm.
We do that through flying the old airplanes and talking about them,
mm-hmm.
and by displaying them. But we are not Disneyland by any stretch of the imagination, and our purpose is to do that. And one of the ways we do that is we do encourage young people. We could not do what we do without a wonderful cadre of volunteers, and we encourage young people to come and start volunteering at a relatively young age. We can put them to work doing they're not going to be on the flight line, but we can put them to work doing some other things, and they work their way up. And indeed, we have folks who are now pilots and flying
wow.
the show who started mowing the grass.
Isn't that something?
So we encourage folks to contact us if they have a young person who's interested in aviation, or even if they, you know, adults that are interested are encouraged as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, one of the other things most people don't know is we have about as many antique automobiles and vehicles as we do airplanes, and there's a whole separate crew of folks who are interested in that who take care of those for us, and that's also volunteer.
Wow, that's amazing. And the way it all works together, and it's such Americana. It's so wonderful having you guys in the Hudson Valley. I tell you, where we're and you know how many aviation museums are there? I mean, there are not a lot, so you're rare as hen's teeth, but top quality destination. Now let's get into first. Let's talk about the collection of the planes. What kind of planes
okay.
do you have? And talk us about.
Let me kind of go through the three categories that we have. We have the Pioneers, which are the machines before World War I. The World War I aircraft, and then what we call the Golden Age of Aviation, or the Lindbergh era, and that's between World War I and World War II. And then we stop at about 1941 for a number of reasons. We're just not that interested in the World War II airplanes. They're not what we're all about. But also, flying and maintaining those machines is geometrically more expensive.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We just stopped there. Also, they don't go in and out of our little airport so easy.
Mm-hmm.
So Pioneer Aircraft, the one that I would highlight, would be our 1909 Blériot Type 11. It's virtually identical to the machine that flew the English Channel in May of 1909 on a 45-horsepower engine. It flies every Saturday and every Sunday. We believe it to be the oldest flying airplane in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah.
It is in large measure original. Any airplane gets rebuilt over the years. Things like fabric get replaced, engine parts get replaced. But it is in large measure original, and you won't find that flying anywhere else in the world on a regular basis except in England. There's one in England that is actually 2 weeks older. And that's in the Shuttleworth Trust collection, and that flies once in a while. Ours flies on a regular basis. So a fascinating machine, and it does fly. It doesn't fly high. It doesn't fly far, but it flies.
Wow.
And then World War One would be our next category, and I suppose the airplane that most people associate with World War One would be the Fokker DR1 triplane.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a copy triplane. There are no originals left. There were only 320 built during the war, and they were not particularly good airplanes, but they are famous and largely because of two people, Manfred von Richthofen, who was the Red Baron of Germany, who died with 80 victories and flew Fokker triplanes, and Snoopy.
Yeah.
Who flew in a song. And it's amazing the impact of that people remembered that. So we do have the Fokker triplane. It flies in dogfights with Allied aircraft that we have. This summer, we're bringing back two and perhaps three Allied aircraft that have been out of service for a while. And then we have the golden age of aviation, and that was the time when private flying started in this country and when airline flying started in this country. And the iconic machine from that era would be the Spirit of St. Louis that
mm-hmm.
Charles Lindbergh flew from Roosevelt Field, interesting, on Long Island, to Paris, France, and did it in 30-some-odd hours solo, which was thought not to be possible. And we have a copy of that machine with the original engine in it. It is, we believe, the most authentic copy in existence. The only known original, of course, is in the Smithsonian, and that will never fly again. But we were very fortunate in that over the 20-year period that it took to build that airplane, we were able to access the machine in the Smithsonian, particularly in the final year. Theirs was down off the ceiling on the floor. They were working on it, and there were many things that, since there was only one ever built, there weren't a lot of detailed drawings available, and so we were able to go down and measure parts and assure that we were building it as close a copy as we could. So the 1910 Blériot, the 1918 Fokker DR1 triplane, 1927 Spirit of St. Louis, probably three iconic aircraft that would be associated with us and with those eras.
Yep. And how many planes do you have altogether in the collection?
Depending on what you count as an airplane, because we have bits and pieces in some cases, we have approximately 70.
Wow.
About 20 of them fly at any mm-hmm. given time.
And now you also have motorcycles, was it, that you have over there?
We have motorcycles, we have cars, and we have a World War One tank.
Wow.
So we are well represented in vehicles.
So it's a car museum, too, and a motorcycle museum.
In a way, yeah. We can't expend the resources on the vehicles that we do on the airplanes,
mm-hmm.
but we have a good number of them. And on any good air show afternoon, you're likely to see half dozen to 10 of our antique vehicles.
Now, what kind of vehicles do you have? What kind of? I know you have an Indian motorcycle, right? That's one.
We actually have two and another on the way.
Uh-huh.
We have, I think at this point, we're up to about five or six Model Ts.
Mm-hmm.
We have any number of other antique automobiles that appear. And we have, coming back this year, a Baker Electric from 1911.
Wow.
That has been around a lot, and we've spent the winter doing a lot of restoration on that. And that was a vehicle that was far in advance of its time. And had we stuck with Baker Electrics, the world would be a lot different today.
Oh, yeah.
But we have that, and folks can see that during the show.
Oh, that's fantastic. So the cars, would you say that goes up to World War II, or that's more pre-World War One? Once again,
our cutoff date is about 1941.
1941. Okay, so you've got some of the newer of the old cars as well as the old ones.
Yeah, we have a 1927 Chandler. So the cars work their way up along through their eras, just as the airplanes.
Yeah. Now, this is a good segue into the fact that people need to know that you have two air shows. One's a Saturday show, and one's a Sunday show. Maybe talk about those shows, how they're different, what you can see. It's a great thing for families to go see everybody. I mean, you know, you name it. It's a great opportunity.
The Saturday show we call the History of Flight Air Show, and it includes a wider selection of airplanes. It's more of the Pioneer aircraft. We fly three of those. We usually only fly one on Sunday. We fly the World War I airplanes in a teaser for the World War I dogfight on Sunday. And then we fly the airplanes from between the wars, the Golden Era. And, for example, we finish the show by putting up five biplanes. There's five biplanes ranging from 1927 through 1941. And they are flying in formation and doing some very interesting maneuvers. And that's the Saturday show. Mm-hmm. Sunday traditionally has been our World War I show. It's somewhat different in that there is a storyline. Mm-hmm. And the storyline involves a hero and a heroine and a villain and associated characters. And that's probably what we're best known for. It's our attempt to try and present in a entertaining and educational way something that was tragic. It was a war. Mm-hmm. And so in order to deal with that, Cole Palin tried to put together what he called a melodrama. He was a great fan of the silent movies and the early sound movies of the 30s that presented these kind of moral dilemma melodramas. And so that's the Sunday show. And in that show, you will see a couple of Pioneer airplanes. You'll see some of the supporting cast of Golden Age airplanes, but the focus is on the World War I machines.
Well, that sounds like a great time out. That's, can somebody get something to eat when they're there, or do they bring picnics, or what do they do as far as, you know?
Absolutely. You can do either. There are folks who bring a picnic, and we have a tent and picnic facilities for them. We also have Eugene's snack stand, and people actually come for the hamburgers. We don't know what he does, but we love his burgers, as do our patrons. So, interestingly, yeah, we do have that. I think the other thing that's important is it's not just the air show. The other, you know, 70 airplanes, 50 of them have to be someplace because they're not on the airport, mm-hmm. and they're in the museum, and that's part of the day as well. You can spend a couple of hours up in four large museum structures, and we have a Pioneer building, we have a World War One building, we have a 30s building, and then an overall history of flight building. So those four buildings, depending on your level of interest, you can spend a great deal of time there. We are a museum. Mm-hmm. We just happen to fly, and that comes from Cole Palin, who said, it's not an airplane if it doesn't fly.
That's very good. So we've got the weekend, the special shows and all. People can come during the week probably and see the museum, you know, the other buildings.
The museum is open during the week, uh-huh. and we don't promise flights during the week. They may happen. We may be doing some test flying. Mm-hmm. But in large measure, it will be that you'll come and you'll see the static display and our folks maintaining and working on the airplane. I think the other thing that folks need to realize is that this can be very participatory. Mm-hmm. You can fly in a 1929 biplane. And so we would very much encourage folks to come prepared to go for a ride in a 1929 New Standard D-25. And that airplane, we have two of them, the world's smallest airline, 8 seats total. And we can get you up, and you can feel the wind in your hair and whistling past the open cockpit and smell the engine oil and really become a barnstormer.
Boy, that's a real experiential museum. That's good. I'd like to cover with most of the attractions if there's any events that they do every year that are their big events so that people can think about them in following years, and then we'll get into more specifics into what you're going to be doing.
Sure. Well, a couple of things. Our third annual gala is coming up on May 19. And for folks who might be interested in that, they can simply go to our website, which, by the way, is Old Rhinebeck, oldrhinebeck.org, and get all the details. And that will be opening our season in many ways. The first air show will be June 9 and 10. So, but that's the event that we now open our season with is the gala, and we would encourage people to come. It's a wonderful evening, dancing in a hangar with a big band and a gourmet meal. And again, they can go to the website and get information on that. Then during the season, events have become an interesting part of what we do. We understand that not everyone is 100% committed to watching every nut and bolt on every old airplane, that there are other things that folks like to do. And so we have a series of events that we're going to be doing through the year. Two of them I'd like to talk about, one because it's near and dear to my heart, will be in August. And it's August 18th and 19th, I believe, and that is Kids Fly Weekend. I do that in large measure. What we do is the first 25 youngsters through the gate get a model airplane, a rudimentary model airplane. We build the model airplane. We talk about it. We do some interesting activities regarding learning about flight. And then we take those models and we fly them at the aerodrome. Just prior to the show, we get everybody out on the runway. Usually we don't let anybody on the runway, but in this case, we get all those kids out on the runway, and we do what's known in the model business as a mass launch, and the kids will all get out there and get their pictures taken, and then we have a drawing for a biplane ride, and the kid gets to go, who gets chosen, and take an adult of their choice. So it's Kids Fly Weekend, and that's August 18th and 19th, and that will be coming up again this year.
We only have 3 minutes, so you're going to have to talk.
Okay, real fast. I'll finish it up real fast. And then the big event at the end of the year is our last two weekends in October, because we do pumpkin bombing. And that seems to attract a monstrous audience by our standards. And essentially what we do is we try and bomb the evil Black Baron of Rhinebeck with pumpkins.
Sounds good. Now, do you do Mother's Day and Father's Day events? And
we do not, because we're not open.
Okay.
Usually,
okay.
The shows usually aren't. I don't know if Father's Day falls within our range this year or not, but Mother's Day sure doesn't.
Okay. So maybe on the event calendar will probably be on your website.
Absolutely. OldRhinebeck.org, right up at the top on the menu, click on events, and there is a listing. Also, we have two Facebook presences, and you can find those by simply searching on Old Rhinebeck, and all of our events are listed there as well. On the website, if you go to our calendar and click on the date, it will open and tell you the details for the date that you are interested in coming.
Okay. Now, if somebody's got a bus group, do you have a phone number that they should call to? We want to reserve in advance on things like that.
Absolutely. And we do have a group rate. Bring 15 or more, and we will give you a significant discount. And that is 845-752-3200. 845-752-3200. Or again, you can link off of the oldrhinebeck.org webpage.
Okay, that's great. Anything else you'd like to? We covered pretty good. Most of the. Oh, the snack bar, is that open during the week, or is that just a weekend thing?
That is just weekends.
Okay.
But one of the things about being located in the Hudson Valley and being within 5 minutes of Rhinebeck, you can find spectacular food in any price range that you want. And also for folks who are coming and thinking about spending a weekend, absolutely there are accommodations of all sorts. And since we just have probably about a minute left, for those of you who are in the southern area of the listening range, Metro North now has a program. You can go to their website, click on Getaways, go to Hudson Valley. You can take the train to Poughkeepsie and pick up a zip car and come to Old Rhinebeck. And everything's included. You've already paid your admission to the aerodrome. And that's a new program this year. And we encourage folks who are down closer to the city to perhaps hop on the getaway.
Yep.
Amtrak, if you want to take Amtrak, that gets you to Rhinecliff. And from there, you can get a cab to the aerodrome.
All right. This is great. Mike, I really, really appreciate you coming on. I hope everybody that's listening, if you've been to the aerodrome, go back. And if you haven't been there, really, it's one of the top attractions in the Hudson Valley. You don't want to miss it. You're also near the Culinary Institute if you want to go and, you know, spend a couple days. Rhinebeck is a class act as a community. I think you'd really like walking around the town there also and checking things out.
So, and Red Hook has become also, my old hometown, has become a very interesting place to visit. And again, you can get all of these details if you've forgotten something that I've said or want more information at oldrhinebeck.org. And I'm going to spell that again because it gets misspelled a lot. OldRhinebeck.org.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mike, and you have a good week.
Thank you, Marietta. Have a good one.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's a wrap for this week, folks. I hope you take advantage of the opportunity. Have a nice time. Bye-bye.